Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
No, John Rook's not here today. He's in sunny South Florida. Is it sunny down there, I think? Is it, Doc?
What he said on Facebook was it was sunny and warm when he got in.
Okay, so he's in sunny and warm South Florida where the Cincinnati Bearcats are taking on the South Florida Bulls, I believe, is their mascot. In the Thursday night ESPN game of the week, John will be doing radio. So Eric Scalavino here from PFW with my very special guest, who's having trouble with her headphones. Shalice Manza-Young from the Providence Journal. See the little button on the side there?
A button. Okay.
Yeah, switch that thing over.
Gotcha.
She's so sweet to come in there and help bail me out today. How you doing, Shalice? Did you hit the little red button there, too?
Red button, too. See?
That helps.
Technical difficulties right off the bat. Sorry,
that's okay.
Eve.
No, no problem. So, Shalice, if, for those of you in our audience who don't know, Shalice covers this team for the Providence Journal and has done so for the past 4 years and is one of the people that I see every day in the locker room, knows as much about this team as any of us does.
Probably more.
Probably a little bit more, too. Certainly more than you, Doc.
True.
Oh, okay. He went to Syracuse too, though. Shalice.
Oh, nice.
Shalice is an orange woman. How do you what do you guys
we're,
do for
we're
that term?
Orange. Just orange has no gender. It's
oh,
just the fruit.
Right.
We're orange.
Okay, so that your mascot that is just a big fruit that runs around the
yes, Otto
Carrier Dome.
He's awesome.
Otto.
Yeah,
that's his name.
It's the same
okay.
Forward and backwards.
Oh, all right. Clever, clever. So anyway, aside from Shalice, we're going to have a couple of other guests on the show today. As usual, in the 3 o'clock hour, Russell Baxter from ESPN, who is our football guru, will be joining us via the telephone. But at 2:15, in just a few minutes, we're going to hear from somebody who covers the Titans, this week's opponent, who you know knows a lot about them, from the Tennessean beat writer Jim Wyatt is going to be joining us on the Playbook. And as usual, on Thursdays, as John is always encouraging us to do, he wants us to give our predictions for this game. So fans, please, who are listening, write in. Give us your score. Not just who's going to win, but the score of the game. John always likes to have his Nostradamus prediction for what's going to happen. What are you doing? Syracuse fight song? Really? All right. We'll make our guest happy. So... make you feel a little bit more at home. But
we haven't heard that too much this football season, unfortunately. So.
This is very true.
That Paulus kid isn't too bad.
He's not too good either.
Yeah, but what did you expect? He hasn't played football in 4 years. He's been dishing passes in the paint.
I would expect that a division
grabbing rebounds
can find a quarterback who isn't a point guard.
That's a story that I can't answer because
my
school doesn't have football anymore either, so...
Syracuse did win two lacrosse national championships right on the field behind us.
That's right.
That's true.
I was there for both of them.
Boy, Cornell choked in that one, didn't they, this year?
Somebody wouldn't let the Cornell marching band play in the late stages of that game. I can't imagine who that guy must have been who was controlling their microphone.
The person who handles stadium entertainment?
Maybe.
For this venue?
Somehow there weren't any replays of Cornell goals either.
Wow.
I don't know what happened there.
You're horrible. You are horrible.
Nice job.
So anyway... in the meantime, between now and the Syracuse game, we're going to talk about the Patriots, of course. Tennessee this week, Shalice, they're 0-5. New England's 3-2. Some people in New England are skittish over the fact that they're 3-2, but they're playing an 0-5 Titans team who Bill Belichick and Vince Wilfork and anybody else you ask in that locker room is not convinced is a bad team at 0-5. Are you buying it?
Bill Parcells, people around here know him well. His thing is, you are what your record says you are.
Mm-hmm.
So and if you're a believer in Bill Parcells, then they are just that bad. But do I think that they're as bad as the Rams and the Chiefs and the other 0-5 teams, no. I do. There are certainly some elements to the 0-5 is a little bit misleading. They were in some close games, but they still, you know, it's really strange. It just, you know, we always talk about parity in the NFL, but for them to go from 13-3, which even at 13-3, maybe they were a little bit better. Their record was a little bit better than they actually were last year.
They play a little bit over their heads, yeah. You think?
But, I mean, to be 0-5 at this point, it's really surprising to see them. And really, who did they lose other than Albert Haynesworth? I mean,
right.
Does one player make that much of a difference? We all believe in football that it's the ultimate team sport. So should one guy make this much of a difference mm-hmm. for them?
Well, I too think that they played a little bit over their heads last year. But I kind of wonder if they've already given up after five games. I heard, I can't remember which player it was who said it, but I think I heard, you know, because this week is another AFL legacy mm-hmm. game. So the Patriots are technically the Boston Patriots this week, as the guy in the Denver press box let us know after every play. And the Titans are going to be the Houston Oilers.
Right.
And I heard one of the players on the Titans / Oilers say this week, he referred to his team as the Houston Spoilers.
Ooh.
Or the Tennessee Spoilers. I can't remember which player said it or what quote, where the quote came from. But that kind of sounds to me like they're a team that's kind of acknowledged that they're not really going to go anywhere this year, and they're just playing to, you know, spoil other teams' mm-hmm. chances at things. I find it a little hard to believe that a Jeff Fisher team is going to roll over and die after five games, even though they're 0-5. It's a huge uphill battle from here on out, obviously. But I have to think there's some fight left in this team, and that they're going to come in here and still give New England as much as a battle as they would if they were 5-0.
You would hope. I mean, they have some veteran guys in there. Kerry Collins is a veteran. You know, Keith Bullock, another Syracuse guy. He's a veteran guy. He's a fiery guy, passionate guy. You would think that they're not going to roll over, but at what point, I mean, the statistics are there. No team that started 0-5 has ever made the playoffs before. I mean,
right.
Are they really going to win 11 straight at this point to even give themselves a chance? So you can put it out there, but it's kind of improbable.
Yeah, and especially the division that they're
exactly.
in. It's not like they're in, you know, the NFC South or the NFC West.
For the AFC
where there's
West,
a,
right.
You know, 9-7 or 8-8 could get you in, and if you conceivably go, you know, have a winning record from here on out, you could potentially win your division and, you know, even get a bye week
right,
in the
exactly.
bad NFC, but they're not. So, that you know, they've got Indianapolis, who's pretty much solidified themselves as being the cream of the crop in that division again after last year's aberration being
Houston's
in second.
Houston's having a good year.
Well, I don't know what to make of Houston right now. I had them as a wild card team
mm-hmm.
in our PFW predictions issue right before the first game. And I don't know. Some weeks they look like they're putting it together. Mm-hmm. And then other weeks, like week one against the Jets, they look like they took three steps back.
And then you can say the same thing similarly about the Jaguars. Is some weeks they look good.
Yeah.
And then other weeks they look terrible. So
our friend, we have a fan who writes in, Shalice.
Okay.
Who
just
goes,
one?
Goes by the name of Strippers.
Oh, okay.
And because he's involved in that line of work.
Nothing
so he,
wrong
his,
with that.
And his email comes up. The name that comes up on the email is Strippers.
Gotcha.
So Strippers writes in, and he is the man when it comes to finding out obscure facts or things that we ask about. Within minutes, he comes up with the answer usually. And I asked about the player who said Tennessee Spoilers, and it was safety Michael Griffin who said that. Once called the Houston Oilers could be the Tennessee Spoilers. He sort of conflated the two.
Mm-hmm.
But that still says to me that he's sort of...
And Griffin's not even playing this week, is he?
Well,
doesn't he have a broken arm?
Well, that's the question, too. They have a lot of questions in their defensive backfield this week. One of the writers from the Tennessean had to do a little something cross-promotion for them earlier this week, and one of the questions they asked me was, is it going to be a long day for the Titans' backfield because two rookies could potentially be starting at mm-hmm. cornerback? And he was referring to Ryan Mouton and Jason, McCourty. And part of it's for injuries. Part of it might be because their secondary is just not playing well. But you know what Belichick's answer would be to that. You don't take any player for granted. You don't
right.
take any team for granted. Just because they're a rookie doesn't mean they can't play.
It is what it is.
And thank you, Bill. But in a normal year, I would buy that. But in a year like this, New England, especially since New England's wide receivers haven't really been on fire. They haven't been lighting up the world like they were 2 years ago. So,
well, their quarterback's not lighting up the world yet either.
They are, so. Right. They're, the offense as a whole hasn't been the offense that we're used to seeing out of this team. But that said, if there's ever a week where you might think that they could try to break out of it, it might be against two rookie cornerbacks. We'll find out from Jim White if he knows anything further about whether or not that's going to be the case.
I also just saw that they signed Rod Hood, the former. They just signed Rod Hood from the late of the Cardinals, so he's a more experienced player. But who knows if he can just if you can just insert him right into the lineup on Sunday or what? So,
well, let's try to get some answers from the aforementioned Jim White from the Tennessean. Jim, welcome inside the playbook with Eric and Shalice.
How you guys doing today?
Good. So, Jim, we were just talking about the defensive backfield and the problems that the Titans have had and the potential this week for two rookies to be starting at corner. What's the latest on that, if you can update us from what you've seen at practice or heard from being around the team this week?
Well, man, I'm actually staying at practice as we speak right now. We're able to watch practices here, and I certainly can't give away what they're doing in practice, but I think there's a real good chance of the rookies playing, because Finnegan, you know, did not practice yesterday. Don't expect him to be listed as practicing on the injury report today. You know, Nick Harper's obviously out. Vincent Fuller, their nickelback, is out with an arm injury. So they do have, you know, Jason McCourty, Ryan Mouton will be the next guy stepping up. They did sign Rod Hood today. You know, I expect him to be active. What kind of role he's able to play after just practicing for a couple of days kind of remains to be seen. But it's a banged-up group. And you didn't even mention the fact that, you know, Michael Griffin, their starting safety, there's not practicing for the second straight day. And, you know, certainly will be questionable as well.
So do you think that's definitely going to be a baptism by fire for those rookies? I mean, Tom Brady's been struggling to get his feet under him and wants to make those hookups with Randy Moss. The Patriots don't have any plays of over 40 yards yet this season. Are we looking at a lot of potential for that with two rookies out there?
Well, I mean, they've been kind of baptized over the last couple of weeks and almost drowned, I guess, both times, because they, you know, they were lit up pretty good by Peyton Manning with both those guys on the field a lot. And the same way against Jacksonville a couple of weeks ago. They, because of injuries, those guys have had to play a lot over the course of the last couple of weeks. And has not been good. I mean, that's one of the reasons why this team ranked 31st in pass defense. They've already allowed, you know, four 300-yard passing games opposing quarterbacks this year. It's been ugly in the secondary. Part of it's because of rookies, but part of it's just because there's been communication problems. And, you know, a year ago, the secondary was a strength team. You know, three of the four went to the Pro Bowl. This year, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say it's probably one of the weaker spots on the team.
Jim, before we get into more specifics at positions, we want to ask you what we talked about at the very start of the show about 15 minutes ago, which was this Titans team was 10-0 to start last year. They're just the opposite this year, going 0-5 to start the season. Are they really as bad as that 0-5 record indicates? Are you buying that, or are they better than that?
Up to this point, yeah, I would definitely say they're bad. You know, they could have won. They could easily have won the Jets game, but they had a returner drop a couple of balls and gave the Jets two touchdowns. Could have easily won a game against the Texans when they blew a 21-7 lead. But since then, it's kind of they've unraveled. They were blown out of Jacksonville a couple of weeks ago, blown out against the Colts. They've got issues across the board. I mentioned the secondary, but they have trouble in the return game. You know, the passing game has not been very good. Kerry Collins is not looking like himself. Punting game is not good. I mean, there's so many different holes on this team. They're not getting pressure on the quarterback. I don't put them in the same category as teams like the, you know, like the Rams and the Raiders and some of these other inept teams, because this team, again, has some talent on it, and they won 13 games last year. But right now, it's a bad football team, and they keep talking about how they've got the talent to get better, you know, talent to get better and to turn things around, but they're showing absolutely no signs of doing that. You know, I look at the schedule moving forward, I don't see them winning more than a handful of games of what they're playing right now.
So were you surprised at all? It sounds like you probably weren't, to hear Michael Griffin's statement. I don't remember exactly when it was, but he referred to the team as the Tennessee Spoilers.
Shouldn't be. I mean, I was standing right next to him when he said it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of an immature statement, to be honest with you. I don't, especially we're in the locker room in Jacksonville, because after the fourth game of the season, you're already calling yourself a spoiler. Whether it's true or not, that's not the message you want to send to the rest of your teammates. So not surprised because of who – I guess because of who it came from, but certainly not the attitude that they need to have moving forward. And I think certainly some guys are getting more disgusted and discouraged the longer this losing streak goes. But for the most part, you know, guys have been, you know, committed, and they've got some veterans on this team that are embarrassed about what's happened and want to get it turned around. They're not, you know, they're not giving up on the season yet, but it's getting ridiculous. Any talk of turning around to try to get to the playoffs.
That's what I was just going to ask you, is do you think that they've thrown in the towel or given up on the season yet? Do you think they have enough veteran leadership in that locker room to prevent this from getting much worse than it is?
Well, I think most of them resign themselves to the fact that this is not going to be the end of the playoff run. And, you know, I think they tried to keep that hope alive when it was 0-2 and 0-3. You know, it got to be 0-4 and 0-5. I think they realize now that they're playing more to try to, you know, for pride and to turn this thing around and to show that, you know, kind of what they're made of, more than trying to get on a streak where it's going to end with some magical playoff run. I think most guys realize that's not the case. But while they've got a good group of veterans here, I do also know that they've got a bunch of guys that have experienced some good times around here over the last couple of years, and they're frustrated by everything that's going on around them. So there's potential they keep losing that things could start to get ugly. And I think the first signs of it happened this past weekend when Javon Kearse was one of the inactives, and instead of sticking around here and rooting his teammates on the sideline, he decides to get back in his car and go home and watch the game on television, which I thought was not what you want to see from one of your veteran players. They should be there supporting their teammates. I think that's the first sign of maybe some disharmony in the locker room.
Jim, the perception, at least up here in New England, and I think it holds true the rest of the NFL, is that Jeff Fisher is a very good coach, respected coach. I'm sure he's frustrated by what's going on with his team right now, but how has he been reacting to this publicly? What kind of face has he been putting on in front of you guys down there who cover the team?
Well, he doesn't change much, and he's, you know, certainly he thinks his philosophy and his decisions he makes are the right ones, and it's defensive maybe when he's challenged on him. You know, he's been asked a lot about the quarterback situation over the last couple of weeks. He's certainly not budging on that, not going, you know, despite some of the, you know, cries from fans to try something new with Vince Young to give a spark. He's not doing it. And it seems like the more he's asked about it now, the more defensive he gets. You know, he certainly has come under fire a little bit over the last couple of days for the way he handled Javon Kearse's situation. You know, he decided not to find him and to say it's a personal deal between him and Javon, when I think, you know, some other people feel like he should have maybe disciplined him for walking away because it set such a bad precedent. But he has stood firm on those decisions. He's certainly frustrated by what's going on. You know, majority of the people in town still support him and think he's the right guy here, but anytime you're 0-5 after a 13-3 season, you know, people point fingers everywhere. And if obviously people are saying that, you know, it starts with the coaching staff. And so he knows he's going to get face criticism like that, just like everybody else when things are going bad.
Before we get to the offensive side of the ball, I just want to wrap up the defense with this question. It seems to us that the loss of Albert Haynesworth has been pretty devastating for that defensive line. Is it really the case that one player has made that much of a difference for you guys?
Well, it's made a difference. It's not the reason why they're 0-5. I mean, I think some people point to that. You know, they got a new coordinator here as well. Jim Schwartz left. You know, that has something to do with it. You know, the injuries, you know, in the secondary have a lot to do with it. But there have been some communication breakdowns and you know, some serious gaffes made by veterans in the secondary that have allowed touchdowns and big plays to happen. And that's not because Haynesworth's gone. It's just because they've made some mental breakdowns. Had a lot of mental breakdowns. They miss Haynesworth. They're not getting the pass rush that they that they did last season. You know, his absence has caused, you know, guys like Van and Bosch, their defensive end, and Curse and all those other guys not to be nearly as effective because they're getting more chip blocks and just not having one-on-ones like they did when Haynesworth was here. So it's had an effect on the whole defense. But to point that as being the reason why they're 0-5 or the reason why the defense has played so poorly, I think that's giving everybody else, letting everybody else off the hook to say that.
Switching to the offensive side of the ball, Jim, is there a best way or what is the best way to slow down Chris Johnson?
Well, it's funny. Chris Johnson's kind of, you know, he's got great numbers. And he's had, you know, some long breakaway runs for touchdowns this year. But he's also been stuffed. You know, he's kind of been hit or miss for him. You know, teams have done a pretty good job of bottling him up by keeping a lot of guys in the line of scrimmage and tackling him before he gets in space and gets going. You know, he's as fast as anybody in the league. And certainly if he gets in the open field, nobody's going to catch him. But the teams have done a good job at getting hands on him early through penetration and causing the kick outside, and people are out there waiting for him. So they, the key to stopping him is, also stopping Kerry Collins, the passing game, and that people have been able to do that this year as well.
Well, that was going to be my next question was, last year when Collins led them to that 13-3 record, I kind of was mystified all year that he was playing at such a level, given the way his career had gone before. I mean, he'd had some good years. He'd gone to the NFC Championship game before, but it seemed like he was playing at a level that he hadn't played at before, and now he seems to have come back to earth a little bit this year. Are we going to see him through this whole game, or is the hook going to be a little bit quicker for him, and are we going to see Vince Young, do you think, on Sunday?
You'll see him unless it's a 31-10 blowout in the fourth quarter and they decide to throw Vince at the last minute. Jeff Fisher's not budging on that at all. I mean, he's not on a short leash. He's not an interception away from getting pulled. You know, Jeff Fisher's made it very clear that Young is a backup, and he's just not going to find his way in the lineup right now unless there was a situation like last week when they got blown out by Indy. So Collins has not played well. He's not played. I will say that he's, in some ways, he hasn't played a whole lot different than he did last year when they were 13-3. It's just that the defense has put him in such a bad position that he's having to throw the ball a lot more. And as a result of that, he's thrown more picks. He's already thrown 7 interceptions this year. He threw 7 all of last year. But they're playing from behind so much. They were behind the Colts early. They're behind, the Jags 27-3 at halftime. They fell down 14-0 to the Jets. So instead of Kerry Collins being a game manager and having other guys make plays, he's forced us to drop back, so many times and throw the football. And teams have been able to come after him, and he's been hit more. I mentioned he's throwing more interceptions. He's rushing his throws more. It's just kind of changed the way he plays because the defense has been bad and because the running game has not been consistently good for him in the last couple of weeks.
Jim Wyatt from the Tennessean, who covers the Tennessee Titans for that newspaper, the paper of record in that state. One or two more questions for you, Jim, and then we'll let you get back to Titans practice there. As badly as this team has been playing this year, is there anybody on either side of the ball or on special teams who has sort of exceeded expectations and is maybe sort of quietly playing under the radar and that we should be aware about who maybe could have an impact in this game on Sunday?
Well, one of these solid players who kind of just flies on the radar a little bit, Stephen Tulloch, their middle linebacker. He makes a lot of tackles, is a good player. Keith Bullock is reliable, still one of their top playmakers on defense. Offensively, you mentioned Chris Johnson. Nobody else has really stood out, to be honest with you. I mean, it's kind of been, last year they had a lot of guys go to the Pro Bowl, a lot of All-Pros, but I wish I could tell you they had a rising guy who was catching eyes. If there was one, it'd be Kenny Britt, and it's kind of been hit or miss for him. He had a 100-yard game a couple of weeks ago, and then he was quiet against the Colts. Kenny Britt's a guy who is a difference maker. There's going to be a heck of a player in the league.
Rookie receiver from Rutgers, right?
Yep, they just got to find a way to get him the football.
Mm-hmm. If you can, give us a prediction for this Sunday. What do you think? Is Tennessee finally going to get off the schneid? It's a tough one, tough place to do it in, but what do you think their chances are?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's 0-6, and I think I'm predicting Patriots 31, Titans 20, but they may it may be somewhat of a surprise if the Titans get to 20, to be honest with you.
Wow.
I don't see them slowing down the Patriots.
Well, it's Patriots have had a tough time scoring 30 points this year, but maybe this is the week that they can get that done. Jim White from the Tennessean, thanks for joining us here in the Playbook.
Okay, appreciate it.
We'll see you on Sunday.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Jim White from the Tennessean, who covers the Tennessee Titans. Interesting stuff from him, Shalice. He was pretty honest and forthcoming with his opinions.
Yeah, he's not making any excuses for them.
Yeah.
Certainly not covering up for their flaws, and sounds like he thinks they have a lot of them. So.
Yeah. So Bill Belichick's buying it, but Jim Wyatt's not.
Well, but we all know.
Yeah, of course. You wouldn't expect anything
Bill makes
less.
Every team sound like the 85 Bears. So
right.
I actually want Bill to give the eulogy at my funeral because he'll make it sound like, you know, I won the Nobel Peace Prize and I was just, you know, the greatest.
Well, I hope
thing.
That he doesn't have to do that
well,
anytime
you know,
soon.
We all go eventually. So
I know. And we have to go to a break right now. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. If you want to join in on our conversation, we're looking for your score and prediction for this game on Sunday and any other thoughts you have about this game, other games around the league, or anything NFL or even anything not NFL. We're open to anything here. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. We'll be back with your calls and emails after this.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Just listening to this riff here. It's pretty good. Nice crescendo coming.
This on the ukulele.
Ooh. Yeah, he mentioned the ukulele. I almost fell off my... Well, I wasn't sitting in a chair, but if I had been, I would have fallen off of it when he said it.
Tuna sandwich and a ukulele. That's all
wow.
He needs to be happy.
Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, Shalice Manzo-Young from the Providence Journal, and we have a new producer in the booth, Tomash. Toyota Tacoma, as Fred likes to call you, taking over for the inept Dr. Dvorkin. Just left the bill. Where did he have to go?
Some sort of meeting.
Some sort of meeting where he's got to prevent, you know, the stadium from having
prevent
good halftime entertainment
fires,
or something.
I don't know. Yeah.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address to join in the show. 508-543-7482 is the phone number. We just, on the other side of the break, we were talking with Jim Wyatt from the Tennessean, who was, boy, if anybody can be as down on a team as he is.
Yeah, he's.
Wow.
He's, but he sees them all the time. So
yeah,
and
no
they actually he
it.
Gets to watch practice, so he can see.
And he was at practice.
He was at practice as he
watching
talked to us.
How inept they might be. I mean, boy, when I think Tennessee, though, I don't think of them as a bad team, and it really surprises me. Obviously, I take his word for it, but it's hard to fathom a Jeff Fisher team playing and acting the way they've been. I mean, Javon Kearse,
right,
acting like a child. Michael Griffin saying ridiculous things. Wow, I mean, it's only five games into the season.
Right, but they're used to having a fighting chance. I mean, the players are used to having a fighting chance. And
I mean, but if this Patriots team were 0-5, mm-hmm. Do you think Vince Wilfork would be leaving the game and going home and watching it on TV?
No.
Randy Moss be calling us the New England spoilers? I mean, I can't fathom it. It's hard to see this.
When you're used to being good, I guess, and... No, they're not that great. They're not used to being the dregs of the league. I mean, you don't really want to be associated with the Oakland Raiders in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And, you know, they're at that. And actually, Oakland has a win this year, so.
Which is surprising. I forgot who did they beat. I even forgot.
The Rams, maybe? It had to be somebody terrible.
There are a lot of really bad teams in the league.
It's surprising.
Early.
Yeah, there's the 5-0 teams or whatever it is. It's the first time that's ever happened. And the Rams, the Lions aren't even winless.
They're trying, at least, I think. I think
the Rams?
No, the Lions,
okay.
I think, are
yeah,
trying.
Well, and they got their win.
They did, but I mean, you can tell, like, they're competitive
and the Chiefs,
every week.
And I think the Chiefs may get their first win this week against the Redskins, because the Redskins seem like they're coming apart at the seams like a cheap dress. So
wow.
They're, Jim Zorn, Daniel Snyder, I think Jim Zorn may get the hook this week. If they can't beat the Chiefs, then Jim Zorn's probably hitting the road. Who Daniel Snyder brings in, who knows, but.
Is there anyone on that staff who could be promoted? Who has any sort of head coaching experience?
I can't even remember who's on their staff.
Wow. I mean, they might almost have to keep him just for that reason alone. Who knows? Although you could say give someone in the experience, they can't do any worse.
Right.
Because Jim Zorn was a quarterback for Seattle for how many years, and he didn't have any real experience coming in either.
Daniel Snyder, I mean, he likes to make big splashes. So if there's somebody who would agree to come in that has a name, I'm sure he would do it.
Well, let's take an email here. Todd from Nova Scotia has a prediction for the game. First of all, he has a question, actually, because he wants to know if Rook took the Titans this week, because John has a couple of times picked against the Patriots this year, and I believe he's been right both times. Did he pick the Broncos last week, Tomash?
I don't know, but he picked
the Patriots
to lose against the Ravens, didn't he?
Was that the game? I know he picked them to lose against the Jets, and he wasn't happy making the pick, but...
I think he picked against them last week.
Was
with
that?
The Ravens?
So I think he's 2-2 with picking against them. I don't think he picked the Titans. I mean, as crazy as he is, I wouldn't think he'd do that. But
I did see somewhere that, was it Joe Theismann, I think? Somebody from the NFL Network, the Playbook show, mm-hmm. one of those three guys.
Did
I don't think it was Theismann.
Name? Did they steal our name?
I think they did.
Or did we steal it from them? No. Maybe not.
But one of those three guys who was on the NFL, Playbook show, mm-hmm. they picked the Titans to win this game, which I don't know what the basis for the belief of that is, but...
That a team can't go 0-16 for 2 years in a row? And that.
Well, you know.
I mean, if the ever
Rams
there's a
may
chance,
do that,
this could be the season where a team goes 0-16 again.
The Rams or the Buccaneers would seem to be the front runners for that contest.
Wow.
The Buccaneers, we get to see them next week.
Favorable
so.
Schedule going into the bye for New England. They play
absolutely.
Winless Tennessee and potentially winless Tampa next week in London. I mean, I had predicted 5-2 for them going into the break at the beginning of the season.
You might be absolutely right about that.
Might end up being there. Anyway, Todd's prediction for this week is, even with the banged-up secondary, he writes, we can't get the offense going again this week. I still don't think Brady's stepping into his throws. Don't know if it's physical because the knee hurt or mental because he doesn't want to lock that front knee with people around his feet. Anyway, Patriots win a squeaker 17-14.
Ooh.
P.S., he writes. This is a plea to Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots. A little inside joke we had there. give up on Maroney. Every time he touches the ball, it's a wasted play. Give his touches to BJGE or Sammy Morris.
Well, Sammy certainly got the lion's share of carries last week. I was surprised that we didn't see Benny get a couple of carries.
I was too, a little bit. I mean, he was active for the game.
Right.
And, you know, Lawrence had a couple of touches, but for the most part was a ghost.
Right.
Didn't really.
And the other thing that I think is missing from one of the things I think is missing from this offense is they haven't been using Kevin Falk at all like they have in recent years. I mean, we really haven't seen Kevin much at all. And when we do see him, oddly, it's to carry
the
ball.
Yeah, up the middle.
Right. I mean, Kevin Falk's job is to be the third down back receiver.
Right.
And we really haven't seen that this year, which is it's surprising.
Right. And I think the one play in particular against Denver, I think it was a third down, might have been in the fourth quarter. They had maybe a 3rd and 7, 3rd and 9. They handed off to him. He was in the shotgun, and you thought maybe, you know, four wides. Mm-hmm. He's back there in the shotgun with Brady. You're thinking maybe he's the hot receiver on us, or maybe a screen pass or something. Handed to him, and he kind of got stuffed like on a 2 or 3 yard gain.
Yeah, I remember that play.
And it was kind of a bizarre call because you're thinking, that's, yeah, you know, on the goal line 2-point conversion, you're used to seeing Brady throw his hands up and Falk gets it and runs up the middle, but that's only for he only needed 2 yards.
Right.
This was
a long
almost
situation.
A full first down length that they needed to get. And you're right, Falk's been in the games, but he hasn't been the type of Falk that we've been used to seeing him out there, sort of the pass catcher role or on screens and whatnot. But you know this. I really like Lawrence.
Right.
Great guy.
I Lawrence as a person, too.
I don't know what I think it is?
And this is knowing Lawrence, not to say that we're best friends or anything like that, but honestly, I think at this point, the only way that Lawrence Maroney will be able to have a salvageable NFL career, I think at this point we're past him living up to what's expected of a first-round draft pick. But mm-hmm. I honestly think that he'll have to go somewhere else to have a good career. I think that it's just there's too many things floating around in his head here. I think, you know, he just it's one of those cases where I think a new team would do him a world of good to just start fresh, wipe the slate clean. And maybe he gets in a situation where he can be the type of back that he wants to be. You know, he's a speed back. We've seen that when he gets into space, he does well. But then there are other times when they hand him the ball and, you know, everybody says he's dancing and things like that. And I think in those times, his initial reaction is to do what he wants to do. But then he realizes he probably should wait a half a step like the coaches are telling him for the you know, the holes to open up and the blocking scheme to develop and everything like that. So I think there's just too much in his head. I think that he just can't be the type of back here that maybe he wants to be. And I think he might need a fresh start.
But even if he goes to another team, if he's that same type of runner there that he is that we've seen here, is that going to help? I mean, is he going to be any better a runner with the running style he has somewhere else? That's my only concern for him, is that, you know, you can take him out of this offense, but you can't take him out of his style of running necessarily, unless some other offensive coordinator can find a way to work him so that he doesn't have to worry about those kind of things. But as a former first-round pick, you would expect him to be the lead back, a lot of carries, 20 to 30 carries a game kind of player. And, you know, if he's that hesitant in another offense, is it really going to have much of an effect?
But I guess the only thing I think about is, you know, just to be unburdened, I guess, with whatever he's been told here. You know, just to have a fresh start and a new set of downs, so to speak, somewhere else where, you know, maybe they can figure out how to get him, bounce him more to the outside. Because I do think that, you know, he can rely on his speed, but in the NFL, everybody else is as fast as he is.
Right.
So, I don't know. Like you said, I like Lawrence too. A lot of us in the media like Lawrence as a person, and obviously, you know, that doesn't speak to what kind of player he's going to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would like to see him do well. I'm not ready to toss in the towel just yet, but certainly there's only a few sands left in the hourglass for him.
Well, and even though it's really not an issue in most years, The NFL trade line is approaching. Tuesday, the 20th, which is only a few days away, is the trade deadline for this year. And historically, at least in the era of free agency, midseason trades aren't something you typically see. I mean, the Braylon Edwards one to the Jets is sort of an exception. But with only a few days left, the time might be ticking for Maroney's career, but it's also ticking for the chance for him to get another shot this year. Would you anticipate any sort of movement of him or any other movement by the Patriots to acquire some sort of talent, whether it's at that position or somewhere else?
I haven't heard anything about them potentially trading. You know, people have. It's come up this year that for some reason everybody's like, oh, the trade deadline. It's there and the date is there, but traditionally in the NFL it's not at all like it is in Major League Baseball, where, you know, it's 20, 30 guys can switch teams in a span of one day. But, you know, I mean, when I was talking to Mike Reese last night, and he brought up, is it possible for the Patriots to acquire Deion Branch, which I have heard that before.
Yep.
You know, Deion, for whatever reason, things have not worked out at all for him in Seattle. We know what kind of love that Tom Brady has with Deion Branch and the relationship that they have.
And, you know, and he didn't really burn any bridges when he left here.
No, not really. I mean, I don't think...
Not badly enough that...
Right, that he couldn't come back. I mean, obviously, things are not working out with Joey Galloway. Julian Edelman is still a rookie. He's still learning. He's, you know, given credit, he's done well for a rookie to this point. But, you know, maybe they could bring Deion Branch back. Maybe a fourth or fifth rounder gets him back here. Who knows? I mean, that makes Seattle look bad. They gave up a first rounder to acquire him and paid him a lot of money. But, you know, it's... That's definitely something worth talking about, because I know he was a fan favorite. I know he was a player favorite when he was here.
And it's a great trivia question, too, because I was trying to think the other day, we mentioned the same trade possibility, and I was trying to think of a player who had been traded back to a team that originally traded him to the team.
Has that happened?
I couldn't think of one.
Because there are so few, like...
There are so few trades
players,
anyway.
Right.
Player trades.
Right, that happen.
Right. Somebody... wrote in after we started talking about this and mentioned that Fran Tarkenton played for Minnesota and the Giants and then sort of went back to Minnesota later in his career. But that person who wrote in couldn't remember if
he was
it was via trade.
Where's Stripper? Can he look it up for us?
Yes. Strippers, please. If you can try to find this for me, trying to find out if any NFL
player... Put down
your
stack of dollar bills for a second and hook us up if you can.
If any NFL player has ever been traded to another team and then that team...
Subsequently
traded him back to the team from which they acquired him originally. I don't think it's ever happened.
That's kind of like the Doug Gabriel situation, sort of.
Yeah, a little bit. Only
sort of.
The Patriots released him and he got picked back
up
by
going back to the Oakland.
But, oh, that was a... Boy. I mean, as bad as the receivers are struggling this year,
right?
It's not going to be as bad as 2006.
Let's remember that in 2006. Rishe Caldwell, Doug Gabriel, and... was it Troy?
Well, Troy Brown was on the team.
Aging Troy Brown.
Right, Jabbar Gaffney got signed in October.
Yep.
So it was a rough go.
And Tom Brady still got them to the AFC Championship game.
He did, which I think should give people optimism about this year, because they're obviously a more talented offense than they were in 06, especially at that position. I made this point the other day in our SPFW column online, in our mailbag. Last year, Peyton Manning was dealing with a knee injury, a bursa sac kind of thing, kept him out of the preseason. Now, obviously not nearly as bad as what Brady's going through, but he missed time. He missed considerable time, and he came back in week one, and he wasn't Peyton Manning.
Right.
He wasn't the Peyton Manning we're used to seeing for the first probably eight games of the season until New England went and played them last year, and they came up with that 18-15 win. I don't remember any of the fans being nervous. I mean, not that we cover the Colts enough, but I would be very surprised if Colts fans were nervous about Peyton Manning and the struggles he was having and whether or not that offense was going to turn it around. I don't certainly have those worries with Brady in this offense. I think in due time they'll make the corrections they need to make, because from what I'm seeing, and tell me what you think, the mistakes that they've been making are not gargantuan.
Right.
They're minute.
Right.
They're correctable.
I agree with that. Actually, our boy Chris Price that writes for WEEI, he spoke with Tom Brady's throwing guru guy just last night. And he said that, you know, he sees the mechanical mistakes that Brady's making and they are fixable. So, you know, I mean, we don't know. And I did some research before the season started. The starting quarterbacks in recent years who have had torn ACLs, you know, Carson Palmer and Donovan McNabb and a couple other players. It took them at least four games to start, at least statistically, being back to what was normal for them. You know, they all took a lot of sacks in the first four or five games. They all, their completion percentage was down the first four or five games. I mean, we don't know how difficult it is. I mean, yeah, Brady looked fantastic in that Buffalo Monday night opener, but...
Well, in the last 5 minutes.
In the last 5 minutes, exactly. So, but, you know, there's 270, 300-pound guys charging at you, and all they want to do is take your head off, and you miss the whole year of the one thing that you love most because of a big guy coming at your knees. So... physically, at times, absolutely, he's looked like he's come back. And mentally, he's said all the right things, and I don't expect him to come out and say, oh, yeah, I'm scared, and nobody's ever going to say that. But
right.
it takes time. It does take time. It takes time just to be on the field and to be good in general and forget coming back from a major knee injury like that for a guy who had never missed a game as a starter before.
You get feedback from readers. Mm-hmm. Don't you? What sense are you getting from them? What are they? Are they nervous? Are they cautiously optimistic? Are they panicking about what's happening with the offense and even the defense? I mean, because the defense is, I thought, played pretty well. I think the defense is playing better than maybe people might have expected at this point, as far as just the amount of points they're giving up per game. But what's your sense from the people who read the Projo? What are they saying?
The funny thing is actually I haven't had too many people, well, of course, the internet being what it is, anybody can read. So somebody actually commented on our Projo Pats blog the other day that Brady should retire and let Hoyer step up and be the quarterback. But obviously that was like a Pittsburgh fan or a Giants fan or something like that. But most of the feedback I get from Patriots fans in the last few days is they're worried about the defense. And they feel
more
like
more so than the offense.
Yeah, they feel like there's not a lot of passion or fire or just a swagger to this defense that maybe they had in recent years. You know, hate to bring it up again for the who knows thousandth time, but when Rodney was here and Teddy was here and Mike Vrabel was here and Richard Seymour was here, did those teams have a swagger that now is missing from this team?
But isn't that sort of to be expected when you lose that many guys who are veterans, who know the system, who know what they can say, what they can get away with, how they can act? And then you make that transition to so many new guys. Some of them are veterans, but they're new to this system. They're new to this team, this philosophy. Isn't there sort of an expected adjustment period that a team needs to go through when they have that many changes? Like
there
the
is, and I wonder. I think the swagger comes from knowing that collectively you've accomplished so much, and these guys haven't accomplished anything together yet. So. I think there's not just an adjustment period in terms of getting to know one another as players on the field and off the field and the communication and things like that, but there's no shared experience together, really. There's not like this body of work that they've accomplished together. Oh, do you remember that fourth down stop we made, you know, a year and a half ago that five or six guys can look and be like, yep, let's do it again. You know, they did have the fourth down stop against the nice stop at the end against Baltimore, but there's not a lot of shared experience with the guys on the defensive side of the ball now. And I do think that's part of the reason why Junior came back. You know, everybody is wondering why did they make this move.
Why now?
Right. But I do think that he has a fire and a passion. And I mean, his pregame speeches are legendary. Mm-hmm. The ones that he gives. I actually asked the player yesterday, are you looking forward to what he says to you guys on Sunday morning before this game? Because it's just infectious. I mean, he has... I don't know if aura is the right word, but there's just something about Junior that he comes in and you can just like feel the passion that he has for this game. And he's going to bring that to this team. And hopefully it rubs off on everybody.
Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482, the phone number. Paul from London chiming in. We're going to be seeing him probably next week when we head out there. You're going to be out there in London?
I will be out there.
It's going to be a fun time, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's going to go by too quick, though, because we got a lot of stuff to do and only a few days to do it.
I'm missing my daughter's birthday for the game, so I have mixed emotions.
Ambivalent about it, huh?
Yeah. I'm glad to be going and glad that I won't be paying for it on my own dime, but yeah.
Never been to London, have you?
Never been.
Me neither.
First trip outside the country, actually, so.
Anywhere?
Well, I've been to Canada, but first trip outside of the continent.
outside of North America.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
But I'm not the only one. Matthew Slater said this will be his first trip.
I'm sure
a lot of the players
haven't had that experience.
I don't feel so bad.
No, I think there are a lot of people who are going to.
We can't all be as worldly as you are.
I've only been to Heathrow. I've never actually been to London proper. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
I'm just going to Harrods. So. I'm
oh, really? You're going to stay there and shop all day?
Yes.
You're going to bring
new shoes.
Going to bring Gasper with you?
Game. Yes.
Oh, I don't think he's ever going to leave. few questions from Paul in London. These are mainly about 2010, he says, rather than this season, but never hurts to look ahead. Number one, Lee Bodden. I know it's early, but what will it take to get him re-signed for next year? And if he didn't re-sign at the end of the year, would the Patriots use Jonathan Wilhite or Darius Butler as the starters? I mean, that's, you know, it is kind of too early because, you know, he could go on a tear and have...
Right.
9 or 10 interceptions between now and the end of the season, and then that could change all kinds of things. But I kind of think he's played pretty well.
I think he's played well, and I could be very wrong, like I haven't been before, but I get the sense that Lee is not a break-the-bank kind of guy. You know, I think that...
Even kind of what happened this offseason, he was kind of looking for more money originally. That was the report, and then he came back to the Patriots and settled for whatever, you know, I think it was, what, 2 and change?
Yeah, I think...
2 million and change.
I mean... Maybe. I mean, I don't. I think you have to wonder how winning changes things and how he was impacted by being on an 0-16 team last year. And actually, he's never been to the playoffs in his career, I don't think. So
maybe Cleveland and then Detroit.
Maybe he's one of those guys that gets a little taste of winning and decides that he'll take a little bit less to continue to win more games than he loses. So, but I do think he has played well.
Yeah, and he's been solid. He's been on that right corner since
he got
pretty much day one of training camp.
He was picked on a little bit by the Broncos, but
yeah, a little bit. But the whole secondary was sort of playing a little bit off and letting Kyle Orton throw him pretty much at will for at least in the second half of that game. You know, the first half they got some pressure on him, but I think there's a chance he comes back because I think he's played solidly thus far. But you know, Wilhite gets better. Butler is certainly. Made a pretty immediate impact, I think. We saw him at left corner quite a bit in the Broncos game, and I think he's starting to get more comfortable in the system, and he's starting to see that athleticism and that cover speed that he was known for coming out of UConn. So, you know, whether or not Bodden comes back, I think you'll see Butler a lot more, and Wilhite looks like he's established himself as a player either in nickel or at either corner spot. So. Number two, running backs. Will Fred Taylor stick around until 2010 as a Patriot? Will Maroney, Morris? I even think Falk's a free agent as well. Yes, he is. John, well, or us. you know more about college football than I do, but will there be a deep crop of running backs next year, and do you see the Patriots drafting any running backs at any time?
I'm not the one to ask about college football. So.
Well, there are a few good running backs in college football. It's way too early to start thinking about the draft, though.
Yeah. I talked draft in like March.
I know, but you know, Fred Taylor, I'd like to see him come back from this injury first. It was
at least two. It was at least two. Turdell Sands got a 2-year deal too, when he was gone 2 weeks after they signed him, which I think he'll be back because I'm sure, as you've noticed, his locker is basically intact.
That's usually a clue that a guy's not too far away.
Right.
But, you know, I'd like to first see Taylor come back from this injury this year. I'm optimistic that they didn't place him on injured reserve the very next day.
Right, which Bill indicated that
he didn't think it was going to be a season ender. So, you know, when he's played, we've seen he can rush for 100 yards. He can carry the load for the whole game. I'd like to see him come back.
Right, but at the same time, you still have to be mindful of the fact that he's 32 or 33 years old or whatever it is. The same thing with Kevin and the same thing with Sammy. I mean, the great statistic that I saw at the beginning of the year, there's only four running backs in the league who are 32 years or older, and three of them are on this roster. So, and the fourth one is Ricky Williams, which I totally never would have thought of him. But, you know, you have to be mindful of the fact there's a reason why guys start to go downhill after 30. If they've been a top back in this league, they've taken thousands of hits.
Yeah.
The human body can only absorb so much before it says, hey, you know, I'm done.
And I wouldn't expect him to come back and be that every down ball carrier,
but
first, second, third. But they do need a replacement.
Right. And whether that's Benny, I mean, I assume you have to give Ben Jarvis a good look. I mean, when I've seen him, I can't remember a time when he had a negative carry, which...
It's pretty good for... I mean, the guy has done nothing but produce in the NFL and in college. He was a two-time 1,000-yard rusher in the Big Ten for Indiana. Then he transferred to the SEC when he went to Ole Miss and rushed for two more 2,000-yard seasons. It's good competition he's running against, and he's producing every time. And since he's carried the ball here, he's done nothing but score touchdowns and rack up yardage. So, you know, I think his time will come. Whether he's the guy to take over as the lead back remains to be seen, but he's got potential anyway.
I think so, too.
And finally, from Paul in London, Sean Merriman. This question could be for now or next year. Would you pick Merriman up as a free agent, or would you trade for him now, hope he has something left, use him to improve the pass rush as an out-and-out pass rusher, or alternatively, what Derek Burgess should have been?
Sean Merriman doesn't strike me as a Bill Belichick kind of guy.
I have the same reaction, but then again, people thought, that's stupid. Tomas is doing the lights out dance. You know, we thought that about guys like Corey Dillon and Randy Moss, too.
Yeah, but...
But how many times can you do that and think it's going to work?
I think, though, too, with Moss and Dillon, the one thing that Bill always says is that they love the game of football. And I don't know... I mean, obviously, I don't cover Sean Merriman, and maybe I'm letting my personal feelings about him cloud my judgment. But he just doesn't seem like... I don't know if he's one of those guys. I mean, because look at a guy like Chad Ochocinco. If it was at all possible for Chad Ochocinco to be on this roster, Bill Belichick would have him here in a heartbeat. You know, for all of the showboating and everything, he loves the game of football. And Bill Belichick loves any player who loves the game of football as much as he does and can produce.
That was a quick hour, wasn't it?
It was very quick.
Did you enjoy it? Did you have fun?
It wasn't bad.
Oh, that's just so demure in her response. Dane to come and spend an hour with my good friend on the radio. Well, thank you, Shalice. I appreciate your time.
You are very welcome.
After the break, we're going to talk with our friend Russell Baxter from ESPN, get a look around the NFL, have him talk about this week's game with the Patriots. But we got to pay some bills first. We'll be right back.
Nice.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically... That's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, The Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Back inside the playbook, Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly sitting in this week for John Rook, who's down in sunny South Florida, or Central Florida. South Florida or Central Florida? Where is he?
South Florida.
South Florida, yeah. He's covering the Cincinnati-South Florida game.
Tampa?
Yeah, for ESPN Radio. And joining us now from ESPN, as he does every week, Russell Baxter, the NFL guy from ESPN. Russell, it's been a long time since we've talked. How are you?
Yes, it has been, Eric. How you been? By the way, since John is in Florida, just admit the fact that we hate him no matter what. So.
Oh, of course.
And we don't care. I mean, we don't care if he's on the tip of something.
I went to practice today to watch the Pats practice, and I had to wear my black winter tote hat because, A, I have very little hair, and, B, it's like in the 40s out there and a little bit unseasonably cold for this time of day and for this time of year. Up here in New England. So, yeah, John's living it up a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little brisk in there and so on, and I'll make sure I'll rub it in his face when I talk to him next
week.
Yeah,
I think he called into the earlier and wrote in on his Facebook page, according to our producer, and said that he was sunning himself. So
yeah, no one ever calls in when it's 30 down there.
Yeah, you know, and yeah. I've been to Florida on a couple of occasions where it's been rainy and damp and like 60 and 50 degrees and just my luck that's kind of how it turned out.
Well, actually, it's funny you said that because about 20 years ago when I went down, a little over 20 years ago, went down for my first Super Bowl, which was the Tampa Super Bowl between the Giants and the Bills.
Great game.
Got on the plane in New York. It was 35 degrees. Got off the plane to Tampa. It was 45.
Not much better, huh?
Yeah.
What was the game? What was that game like temperature-wise? It seemed like that wasn't a problem for the...
No, not at all. No, I mean, I was down there earlier in the week.
So by game time, it had warmed up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd been there the entire week as we were, you know, doing our ESPN shows and down there and all that. So, no, game time, it was nice and crisp, and as we all know, it was one hell of a game.
So before we get to the Patriots game this week against the Titans, because there's plenty to talk about there, but the Titans are not necessarily one of the better teams in the league, obviously, at 0-5, but there are a lot of teams, Russell, who are not good teams this year. It seems like more so than other years, there are a lot of just very bad teams. What's your impression?
Well, I had our Elias look something up. This is the first time in, I think, 13 years since 1996 that four teams have opened at 0-5 in the same season. So you have to go back a little ways. Only the fourth time since the merger. Mm-hmm. If you go back to 1970, and I believe since the merger, there's never been an instance where four teams have opened at 0-6. I think one year in 85, they told me you had three teams that did it at 0-6. So let's just look this week. We got Tennessee is at New England. You got the Rams. And then the Rams are not only 0-5, they're 0-15, keep in mind there. So you get the Rams at Jacksonville. Tampa Bay hosts Carolina, and Kansas City's at Washington. Mm-hmm. Is it inconceivable they could all lose? Not at all, especially the way some of them are playing. And it's funny because even teams, some of the teams that have won one game, like the Oakland Raiders, you almost think they are winless the way they are playing.
Yeah, you forget. I don't even remember who the Raiders beat.
They beat Kansas City 13-10. Of course, Kansas City hasn't won a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you got the Rams team who has lost 15 games in a row. You've got the Buccaneers and the Chiefs, who I believe have both lost nine games in a row going back to last year. And Tennessee, if you really think about it, including their playoff loss, they've lost seven games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to last season.
Right.
They lost to the Colts in the finale. Well, I know they didn't play anybody per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, they kind of went through the motions. They knew they had the best record wrapped up. But then, of course, they lost at home to Baltimore in a playoff game, and they're 0-5. And, Tom Brady.
With pretty much the same team.
Well, pretty much
the same players.
Pretty much the same player except for one player defense, but I think missing a very big component on their defense.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say Albert Haynesburg, but I actually believe it's the coordinator, Jim Schwartz.
Mm-hmm. Who's head coach in Detroit now. And
yes. And
I think he has that team at least trying to win.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, if you've watched Detroit play this year, listen, there have been a few games that have gotten away from him in the second half. But they're a very, very improved team, especially offensively on the ball, confidence-wise. But defensively, of course, they're still giving up a lot of big plays. I mean, they played three games already, giving up 15 touchdown passes in three games. That's a very, very unhealthy clip. But no, they play hard. I mean, they were right in it with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
Made a little really run at Pittsburgh last week.
Yep.
Of course, they snapped that long losing streak. I mean, the effort is there. You know, I'm sure we could get into a debate about who the worst team in the league right now. And right now, I think it's kind of
a toss up.
Toss up maybe between the Raiders and the Rams.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have several teams who are coming into Week 6 without having lost the game yet. So you have sort of two ends of the spectrum. You said that this is the first time in several years where there are so many teams that are winless. But it's also kind of unusual to have this many teams undefeated at this point, is it not?
Yeah. I believe it's the first time, if the NFL release I got is correct, what it usually is, it's the first time I think we've gone into 5 weeks in the season. There's a little caveat there because – of course, the Saints are only 4-0.
Right.
But you do have four other 5-0 teams. And, you know, of course, they led by the Giants, the Vikings, the Saints, 4-0, the Broncos, and the Colts. You know, Colts are off this week. But I think it's also safe that of all those, that have probably the biggest surprise is obviously the Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, of all the teams who are undefeated, and we'll get to the same question later about the winless teams. But of all the teams who are undefeated, which one do you think is the one that is most playing over their heads at this point, that they're not really deserving of that undefeated record? You said Denver's kind of surprising, but do you think that they're still a good team at 5?
Well, I think defensively they are astounding. I mean, you can, you know, a lot of people were knocking early in the year about who they were playing and so on. They beat Cincinnati by a fluke. But let's keep in mind, if they would have lost to Cincinnati, they would have lost 7-6. You know, last year, the Denver Broncos, only two teams in the league gave up more points than they did, and that was St. Louis and Detroit. Of course, Detroit was, semi-historical. But the last game of the year last year on national TV, the Denver Broncos lost to the San Diego Chargers, ironically, who they play this year. And they lose 52-21. This year in five games they've given up 46 points, and I believe in the second half of games this year, I don't think they've given up a point the last 4 weeks. So they have really, really shut people down.
Yeah, and they did it to New England this past week.
Yeah.
I mean, the Mike Nolan obviously making a difference.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they changed their scheme. They brought in a lot of veteran players in their secondary. You know, Champ Bailey now has a corner he's really excited playing with, which
mm-hmm.
is Andre Goodman,
who
has kind of bounced around the league with Detroit and Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Dawkins there would bring some leadership. Ronaldo Hill, who's kind of bounced around the league a little bit as well. You know, Elvis Dumervil has made the connection.
Yeah, getting
the
quarterback.
The conversion from
undersized
defensive end
mm-hmm.
to outside linebacker. Andre Davis, who you know mainstay in Cleveland for a long time,
mm-hmm.
playing inside linebacker as well. I mean, you got to see it for yourself last week.
Right.
They made their adjustments
mm-hmm.
and they did one heck of a job.
Yeah.
You know, stifling the Patriots in the second half and overtime of that game, and that's been their calling card. In this first 5 weeks of the season, I mean, you want to dismiss it after 2 weeks, that's fine. But now we're 5 weeks in, and 46 points is 46 points.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how, you know, some people were Denver fans. I was kind of, obviously here in New England, we're following what happened in Denver in the offseason because Josh McDaniels, someone we knew very well, went there as the head coach. And, you know, from the sound of the fans when the Jay Cutler deal was going sour and when Brandon Marshall was acting up, people were almost getting ready to call for Josh McDaniel's head before even the season started, and then they had a terrible preseason. And I just remember thinking, let the guy play some games that actually count and see what he can do as a head coach. I mean, he's a young kid with a lot to deal with, his first time as a head coach, and you know, I think he's turned things around pretty well. He's surrounded himself with talented staff and some, you know, brought in some good players. I didn't think it was going to be long before he turned things around. I'm still surprised that he's going into week six without having a loss, but it's just funny how fickle NFL fans can be where, you know, one month they're looking at getting rid of a guy who just came in, and then the next minute they're undefeated.
Well, it's funny. I think the combination of maybe him coming on a little strong, and of course immediately the situation with Cutler, which of course when you have the quarterback in a lot of people's eyes, and all of a sudden he's gone, you know, more times than not fans, and mm-hmm. you know how fans can be,
right.
You know, obviously side with the quarterback, and this guy just got here and he just got rid of our franchise quarterback. You know, and then of course Brandon Marshall, which I really don't count, to be honest with you, because Brandon Marshall, I think
they've smoothed things
over. Has kind of brought a lot of things upon himself.
Mm-hmm.
But let's fast forward to when they beat Dallas, and who's hugging Josh McDaniels in the postgame press conference? It's Brandon Marshall, and who's talking about situational football?
Right.
During his press conference, Brandon Marshall. Mm-hmm. And where do we hear situational football? That's Bill Belichick.
Of course.
That's Bill Belichick.
Of course.
Via Josh McDaniel.
Right.
You know, do your job.
Right.
And that's what the Broncos have done so far. They have done their job, and they've done it very effectively.
Right.
And it's going to be really interesting to see, because I believe their defense is absolutely legit. But the next few weeks, I believe they have, obviously, San Diego Monday night. I know they have upcoming games in the next few weeks with the Ravens, mm-hmm. the Colts, and the Steelers.
Tough sledding.
And that will obviously that's an acid test for any team,
sure.
no matter how you slice it.
Sure. Well, you spoke about them having done their job. Miami certainly did a good job for the Patriots as far as the standings in the AFC East went on Monday night, knocking off the New York Jets. So that brought them down to 3-2, same record as New England, and same division record. At 1-1 this week, Jets and Buffalo, another division matchup. How do you see this playing out? The Jets are at home. Buffalo is struggling once again, as they seem to always do under Dick Geron. Is this a week where we can expect another assist from an AFC East team to knock off the tied leader there, the Jets?
Well, if you plan on lending the Bills some players, you might have a shot. But you know, listen, the Buffalo Bills have scored 20 points in their last three games combined. You know, that after scoring, you know, somewhat exploding in the first two games, where they obviously played New England very tough and beat Tampa Bay as well. Their only win again against a winless team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jets' rush defense, and this is more than just the Wildcat the other night. The Jets' run defense had some issues against Tennessee. They certainly had some issues, certainly later in the game when they lost to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, it seems to me that their aggressiveness is almost being used against them a little. Now, Buffalo, you know, when they put their mind to it, can run the football. The problem I think that's happened with the Bills' offense, Eric, is they really rarely challenge people downfield. You know, you look at them when they played New England. You know, a lot of passes to the tight ends and running backs.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's
and are you
they
surprised
really
by
don't seem like they create that much of a threat. I mean, they're really reliant on their backs and their tight ends. And even though Terrell Owens is there, and they have Lee Evans, and they have Josh Reed, they don't really seem like a team that wants to go all that much vertical.
And isn't that the reason they brought a guy like Terrell Owens in, to make that offense more dynamic? And to
I don't think you bring in T.O. to be a dink and dunk guy, no doubt about it. But it just doesn't seem like either Trent Edwards isn't comfortable, or it's, you know, you know, Alex Van Pelt's, you know, first year, you know, calling plays as the offensive coordinator. There could be a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look like a very confident football team right now. There's no question about it. And defensively, you know, they've had a recent history the last few years of injuries really piling up on them.
Right.
This last week, they just lost two more linebackers, including Kawika Mitchell.
And they can't afford that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think the Bills will give it their all here. Okay, they're a team that still plays hard. There's no doubt about it. But I just think they're a little undermanned against a Jet team that I think maybe still a little shell-shocked in the last 2 weeks. Very humbling experience the last 2 weeks. But I think the Jets will find a way to eke one out.
And that brings us to this Sunday's game, Tennessee coming to New England with that 0-5 record. New England coming off the tough loss in Denver at 3-2. It looks like two rookies are – could be starting at cornerback for the Titans. New England's receivers and the offense in general hasn't really clicked and scored the kind of points that we kind of expected they might coming into this season. How do you see this matchup, New England's offense against Tennessee's defense coming in?
Well, here are the numbers you're looking at if you're the New England Patriots. The Titans last year gave up 12 touchdown passes all season. They gave up 13 already this year. The Titans last year allowed two quarterbacks to throw for 300 yards in them all season. It's already happened four times in five games.
Wow.
The Titans gave up 234 points all last year. They've given up 139 already this year. And this was a team that was also very careful with the football, committed only 17 turnovers in 16 games, pretty good total, already coughed off the ball 13 times this year. There's a reason they're 0-5. The offense is now having to try to play catch-up with the defense. And the thing you'll notice about teams, you saw it 2 weeks ago with David Garrard. You saw it last week with Peyton Manning. Even though teams are ahead, they continue to throw the ball on the fourth quarter against this Tennessee team because that's how you move the football against them.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of the ball, is the Tennessee offense a one-trick pony with Chris Johnson? I mean, Kerry Collins doesn't seem to be playing at the level nearly that he was playing last year. Is it just a simple case of shut down Chris Johnson and you shut down their offense?
Well, I think it's because they find themselves, you know, having to it's more a case, I don't even know if Chris Johnson is necessarily being shut down, whereas he's being taken out of the game plan because they find themselves chasing teams. You know, they're giving up points. At the you know, Jacksonville is very unpredictable team, and yet rolled up 37 points against them a couple weeks ago, and they were still throwing the ball, like I said, in the fourth quarter.
Right.
So I think that's more than the case than anything else. And Tennessee's not really an equipped team to be playing catch up all the time, but that's exactly what they've been doing. And it ever kind of started, you know, in the with the Pittsburgh game slightly. You know, Pittsburgh didn't move the ball all that well until the second half, and then really had success. I hear a lot of people saying, well, why don't Tennessee blitz more? They're not getting the pressure on the passer. But that's how they play defense. Last year, they're a team that likes to rush four guys and cover with seven. And they're doing the same thing. But I think the, you know, obviously the Albert Haynesworth loss can't help. But I think Jim Schwartz, like I mentioned earlier, him not being there, you know, Chuck Cecil here is, you know, first-time coordinator, you know, making decisions here. And it's a different ballgame when you go from being an assistant coach to a coordinator, and I think that's certainly a factor in this.
So on Prediction Thursday, Russell, do you have a prediction for this game?
Well, I, you know, it's hard to believe that now Tennessee's going to rise up. And, you know, Tom Brady and the Patriots offense, they haven't yet to be really explosive this season, but this is, I think, a place to get well.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this looks like a New England, like a 38-14 to me.
So they finally get over that 30-point.
Yeah, and I think it may be, and I think it's a lot of it's going to come late because I think Tennessee, again,
put up a fight early.
You just find yourself that the best way to move the football against America is to throw it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost kind of like the Vikings a few years ago, whereas, you know, why bother to run because we know we can't.
Right.
Against Tennessee, it's so easy to throw. And if you watch them, these wide receivers that are running and tight ends that are running against the Titans, they're running wide open. It's not like guys are making spectacular catches.
Right.
And so on. There are some gaping holes and blown assignments, it looks like, with this Tennessee defense.
The next time we talk to you, Russell, the NFL trade deadline will have come and gone. Do you expect any major moves to be made by any teams around the league by Tuesday the 20th?
No, I don't think so. I think the Braylon Edwards move, you know, was certainly opened some eyes last week, and he certainly had a good debut with the Jets. You know, it doesn't seem like anybody – seems like there's a lot of good names out there, but I think teams are probably a little hesitant, especially with the CBA not being – yeah, you know, all set for the next couple of years and so on. I don't think people want to really delve into big money. But if I were going to suggest a trade, though, I would suggest that you and I go to Florida and let John come back here.
Oh, that's a no-brainer.
Okay.
That's a no-brainer. We can
that, to me, would be a huge NFL trade.
I'd be willing to pull that trigger. I don't think John would make that trade, though, right now. Russell Baxter from ESPN, thanks again for joining us, and it's good talking to you again after all this
time. You too, Eric. Take care of yourself. Have a great weekend.
All right. Russell Baxter, the NFL guru from ESPN, joining us as he does every Thursday. We're going to take a quick time out on the playbook here. Come back to your emails and phone calls and predictions for this Sunday's game right after this.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epochet. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' 3 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Playing some good bumps today, Tomash. Good stuff, old school, good mix. Very good mix of stuff. We need to add some more bump music, too, I think, to the what's that thing called that you guys use? What's the
CD player?
No, the electronic thing that you guys...
The replay?
No. Oh, is that
Instant
what it's called?
Replay? Yeah.
That's all it is?
Yeah.
No.
Oh. Sorry to disappoint.
Gotta get some ideas for some bump music in there. Maybe a little... we'll talk about that later, but... Anyway, welcome back inside the playbook. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482, the phone number. John Rooks down in South Florida calling the Cincinnati South Florida game for ESPN Radio tonight. Great college football game. Great Big East game. And John's down there right now getting a tan before he goes into the radio booth tonight for what should be a great game. You can see that on ESPN television as well. earlier in the show, we were talking with Jim Wyatt, beat writer for the Tennessean, the newspaper of record in the state of Tennessee, and he was talking about really quite forthcoming about how dismal he thinks the Tennessee Titans are. They are 0-5, and he really thinks they are as bad as that 0-5 record might indicate. Yet, they still have a very well-respected and prideful coach in Jeff Fisher, who, you know, despite what some of his players are saying and doing, I'm sure wants his team to perform the best it can and to at least give it the effort every time they go out on the field. 15 years now, Jeff Fisher has been the coach of that team. It seems like, doesn't seem like it's really been that long in some ways, but, you know, he's been through them with a lot of ups and downs. They're moving from Houston to Tennessee. He's a good coach. It's unfortunate that he's going through some trouble right now for his sake, but earlier this week, he joined a conference call with the New England media to talk about this Sunday's game against the Patriots, and here's that conversation.
Hi, good morning. This is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
Good, good. You're on here with a couple of media members in New England, obviously, and I think, you know, the first question we just start off with is give us a feel for what has contributed to the tough start, if you would.
Well, I mean, certainly we're disappointed. You know, we had the first three, you know, we had obviously, we look at the first three games as being games where, you know, we're a play away from, you know, reversing the outcome, and it didn't happen. And then we didn't let things. I mean, did not play well at Jacksonville that last week. You know, we played for a half and things slipped away against a good Colt team. So, you know, we're trying to heal up and you know, just stay the course and, you know, practice and just trying to improve as a team. Hopefully, the wins will come.
Jeff, one area that I guess people have focused in on is the struggles you've had stopping the pass. How have you seen that with the loss of Albert Haynesworth? Has that had an impact on putting more...
I don't believe it's been, you know, the fact that Albert's not here. You know, we're still getting pressure. We're still handling the run. And you know, we've got a good rotation going inside. Yes, you're going to miss good players like Albert, but, you know, we've got a good rotation inside, so I would attribute it to the fact that he's not here. You know, it's been you know, an unfortunate combination of things where, you know, we've had either some difficulty in communication or somebody's eyes were wandering or, you know, just those things. But, you know, and then, of course, we've been out without, you know, Cortland. And Vinny Fuller, then he's an integral part of our nickel package. But we expect his return here in the next couple of weeks. So really, you know, if it was one thing in particular, we'd fix it. It's just been a combination of things, and you know, we're trying to grow through it.
Jeff, where do things stand quarterback wise? Will Carey start in this game, or are you considering?
I've not wavered off of that. After the game, I indicated that Carey's our starter. I put Vince in because when you get behind, you get ahead. It makes sense to get your backup some playing time, and that was the reason. It was not a move per se. It was just simply that. So Carey returns as our starter.
How have you noticed teams defending Chris? Obviously leads the league in total yards from scrimmage. We've seen a couple of huge plays, the 91-yard rushing touchdown, the 69-yard catch and run. How are you getting different looks from him, you know, from opponents on how they're trying to contain?
Yeah, you'll see that each week. I mean, people are, you know, they understand that, you know, if he gets the ball in his hands, you know, he's a missed tackle away from going the distance. So people are more aware of it. You see more zone defense than you do man to man. And of course, people are going to be concerned about his whereabouts on third down.
Sure. Jeff, how would you describe the feeling of your team, the emotional swings that you've been through and not yet breaking through? How would you describe the character of your team?
They're handling it well, if that's at all possible. You know, we deal with it. We put the loss in perspective and move on and come back and bring energy to work on Wednesday. And they practice well. They prepare hard. And they believe each week that, you know, we're going to get turned around. And that's really all you can do. The only thing I can ask more of them is just a little more production on the field on Sundays. But, you know, off the field, on the practice field, in the classrooms, they're doing their jobs.
If I could ask you to put maybe your hat of the competition committee co-chair on, Saw something where Chris Mortensen had something where the committee was considering looking at, influence of players on officials' calls. And I just wanted to see if you could comment on that, if that was accurate.
Well, I can't comment on one because I'm not aware of the report.
Okay. It was a tweet, in today's day and age.
That's a pretty character as far as I'm concerned.
Jeff, if I remember correctly, when you guys drafted Chris Johnson, there was some criticism about another running back, and you had a pretty steady situation there. How did you know that he would be the type of guy he is and that you'd be able to use him
We saw. We saw so much tape. And it was obvious to us, when you start evaluating a player like that, in Chris's case, that, this is not a track guy playing football. This was a football player with track speed. And he just has, we just felt like his understanding, his ability, flexibility to change positions and do different things, his vision. It was just something that we felt like he was gonna really excel at this level. And we were fortunate. I mean, he had a great rookie year, and thus far he's off to a good start. We just need to, we need to get him some more help. We just need to play better around him.
In terms of what you see from the Patriots, Jeff, you haven't seen them for a couple seasons in terms of playing them. How different do they look, what they're doing both offensively and defensively?
Well, they're always a well-coached team, and, they're always going to, have something unique week to week, and whether it's subtle or significant, but there's unique, plans. Tom's playing very, very well right now. I know they're probably frustrated with their numbers, but he's playing well. He's moving in the pocket, making accurate throws. And, they're just, they're an elite team right now. And, defensively, they're very, very solid, stout, and well-coached, and they don't give up big plays. And, they're just, the formula's there, and it's continuing.
Jeff, I know you've been asked this question, I'm sure, every week, but you've kind of become a poster child for what's going on in the NFL. And what I mean is you're 5-0 at this point last year and 0-5 this year. And can you kind of surmise the difference between what's happened to this point in each of the 2 years?
Well, no. I mean, last year we got off to a good start and, winning kind of breeds winning. And, we had games last year in the start that were close, that we won. We had an overtime game that we won, and, it's just, one of those things, and you have to win close games. And I think it's obvious, it's apparent, it's the same thing we said throughout the offseason. You just can't pick up where you left off. You just can't, just assume that because, you had a successful season that you're going to repeat, you have to do it over again. And, again, I point to the first three games. I think we've got, two sets of games, two sets of losses, three games that we could have won and didn't for whatever reason. And then we've had two that we didn't play particularly well. So, you have to let go of the past and, dwell on today and bring a mindset to work and to the game that is a winning mindset, and that's how you get out of it.
Jeff, how would one win against a team like the Patriots on the road kind of change your perspective and your team's perspective, more importantly, going forward?
Well, I mean, this team believes they're a good football team. We just haven't played well together as of yet, well enough to win a game. So, I mean, certainly a win against anybody right now would be good for us.
Since winning breeds winning, how do you combat, I'm assuming losing breeds losing, and how do you combat that?
Well, I think that's a different assumption. I'll make a case. I could prove to you that it's a lot harder to be 0-5 than it is 5-0. I mean, that's evident. But I don't believe losing breeds losing. It depends. If you've got injuries and, you have an inability to match up personnel-wise, or, you've got a club that, just can't match, then, it's hard to win games. But, I feel like we've got a good football team, and the wins are going to come.
Jeff, when you experience a stretch like this, are you concerned about the team becoming dispirited, at any point during the game, with any success the team or opponent might have against you, that the tipping point is such that, you know, you become more vulnerable more easily, I should say?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I've got enough veteran players on this team. You know, we've got quite a few players that have won a lot of games here and won a lot of games elsewhere. Your focus, you know, as a head coach, I think has to go, you know, towards your younger players, the first-year players or the second-year players that only know, understand the winning. And then you have to put in perspective and try to keep perspective, you know, the difference between winning and losing. And, you know, it's a mental exercise. But, again, you know, I think it's important to realize that, and our players realize that, you know, what's happened the last 5 weeks is not going to have any bearing on what happens, you know, the next 11.
Thank you. Jeff, just one last thing. A local kid, Ryan Durand, who I know you drafted and ended up in your practice squad. Just
yes.
Kind of comment on his development right now. And
we were real pleased. He had, he had a productive camp, real good off season. Had played quite a bit in the preseason. Was productive, and you know, we feel like he's got a chance to become a good football player. Fortunately for him, he's got a great mentor, and Mike Munchak does a great job developing young players.
All right, Jeff, thanks a lot for your time. Have a safe trip.
Thanks. Okay, guys, have a good week. Thank you.
That's Tennessee Titans head coach Jeff Fisher wrapping up his conference call with the New England media earlier this week, doing his very best to try to put a good face on what's been a very bad season for him and his team so far. At 0-5, heading into week 6, he's got his work cut out for him to get his first win of the season. It's, I don't like their chances. Coming into New England and trying to upset a Patriots team that just came back from Denver after a game they should have won, could have won, had so many opportunities to win. It was a tough loss for the Pats, and I don't see them coming home and dropping two straight. It doesn't really happen under Belichick, and I don't foresee it happening this week. You know, New England's certainly has more talent. They certainly have more to play for at this point, and the Titans have, you know, all the earmarks of a team that's just giving up and not trying right now, despite the best efforts of their head coach, Jeff Fisher, who we just heard from. And I have the painful experience of having to look up and watch on NFL Network here the replay of the Pats-Broncos game from the other day and seeing all the missed opportunities. They just tipped the Kyle Orton pass that bounced out of a couple of Patriots' hands, and Jabbar Gaffney, former Patriot, ended up coming down with, some seasons the ball bounces your way. Like in 2007, everything went the Patriots' way. This year so far, it's been tough. It's been some games, you know, they've made the plays when they needed to make them. Other times, like against Denver, they haven't. But they're still 3-2, tied atop the AFC East with the New York Jets right now. Same record, 3-2. Same division record, 1-1. So it's anybody's ball game still. And with, you know, two, at this point, winless teams coming up on the schedule before the bye week, the Patriots are in every position to go 5-2 heading into their bye week. They just have to get it done, starting with the Titans this Sunday. Quick little practice report before we get onto the rest of the show. Yesterday, the Patriots had four players missing, among them Randy Moss and Ty Warren. Both of those guys were back at practice today. Moss was gone for non-injury related reasons, according to yesterday's injury report. So he and Warren were back on the field. Two guys who were hurt in recent games, Fred Taylor and Matt Light, both remained out of practice. They were the only two, however, who missed time today. So the team was out there in full pads on pretty cloudy and pretty cold day for mid-October here in New England. Only temps in the 40s, so felt a little bit more like Denver on Saturday night than it has throughout, typical autumn in New England of late. But only two players missing from practice, so that's a good sign, at least, for the Patriots. We knew that Light was, you know, had the injury and left the fourth quarter of the Broncos game. Probably knew he wasn't going to be around this week. Fred Taylor, of course, too, had reportedly had the surgery on his foot last week. Knew he wasn't going to be around. But for the most part, the Patriots are healthy going into this game. And that's, you know, good news as the Patriots come back off of a loss to the Denver Broncos. Full pads, so we expect that they were probably doing some pretty good hitting out there at practice today. Yesterday they were in shells and sweats, probably did more mental reps than physical ones today, just the opposite. And Mental reps is something that my good friend Brian Lowe could use a lot more of, and he's joining us now as we segue from
I'm not the
Patriots.
Brightest guy in the world.
Well, you don't have to say it twice,
I'm
Brian.
I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
Or three times. I know that. I believe you. You've proven that time and again. But you're a good friend, and you're here again getting ready for what's going to be another spectacular fantasy lowdown, I'm sure.
Everything Eric said for the first hour and 40 minutes of the show and for the last 35 seconds of the show, disregard. His practice report was spot on. I was there with him for that. It looks like it's 3:43 right now. So over the last hour and 43 minutes that you've been on the show,
yeah,
with the exception of the practice report,
yeah,
I'm assuming,
mm-hmm,
is all wrong.
Well, that
you're
means
you're lying your ass off.
If you've been listening to the playbook today,
yep,
disregard everything you've heard.
So if you've all been listening to the playbook, you are all now dumber.
So disregard what Jim Wyatt of the Tennessean had to say about the Tennessee Titans. Disregard what
Russell Baxter
from ESPN had to say about what's going on around the league. Disregard what Jeff Fisher said about his own team a few minutes ago. You want them to disregard all of that, Brian?
Everything you heard out of the mouth of Eric Scalavino over the last hour and 44 minutes, other than his practice report, you can disregard.
Angry young man.
How are you, Eric?
I'm good, Brian.
Good to be here with you.
My erstwhile roommate on the road.
Yes, yes. Have you missed me the last few when I've kind of
just
been on my own schedule?
I've missed you, especially when we're in Denver the other day, and Andy was sick heading into the game. His son was under the weather, so he caught a little bug maybe from the sun.
Young Jackson.
We went out to the Pikes Peak
I was
Patriots.
Sick because it sucked.
he's got such a big head, you can hear him all the way up there from the office.
Yeah.
He comes in to the game sick from his son. We go out to the Pikes Peak Patriots event on Saturday night. He has some adult beverages. He has a lot of food. He comes back.
Don't even tell him.
Has some cough medicine to try to alleviate the problems that he had. And
don't go. There's nothing good that's coming from the story.
I had a good night's sleep. I had a very good night's sleep. But I sensed a couple of times that there was movement in the room.
Oh,
that he was getting up.
No.
Boo-boo tinkums.
I woke up earlier than he does. As you know, I'm an early riser.
I'm aware.
And he had left, how do I put this? He left a little present in the wastebasket at our hotel room. Well, no, I think it was the other end, but...
Come on. All right, listen.
So yes, Brian, I miss having you as a roommate.
There's got to be something else football-related we can talk about.
Aside from the time that you went cavorting in the rain in Miami and came back and had clothes strewn all about... When I woke up in the morning to try to dry out from that monsoon that you walked into. You've been a great roommate.
Just because it was raining out and I came in wet and meant that I was cavorting? Maybe I was, but I don't
know to cavort.
I don't cavort.
You cavort till the wee hours. You've been known to.
I haven't been known to. I occasionally have.
Did you have a good time in Denver?
I was in Denver for about 6 hours.
Yeah.
Had a really good time.
Did you have a good time?
Had a good time, yeah. Had a good time.
At that stadium, which I had never been to. I'd been to the old Mile High.
I had been to that stadium before, and that is, I like the whole package, I guess I could say, about the Broncos, and I kind of like the city. I like the stadium. Yeah, I'm not going to say I like the team. I'm
love
a Patriots
city.
Fan.
I've
been a Patriots fan my whole life. I don't love that team, but I like the overall presentation, and I like the city. And so I enjoy going there. I enjoy going to that venue. I was there a couple times for soccer.
Decent press box food. Too.
Good press box food. I needed that because I made my
mac and cheese and the soup that you had.
I made that was excellent broccoli cheddar soup. I think it was from Panera.
They had soup.
They had good soup.
I think it must have been after you and I ate.
You would know, Jason. Is Panera?
Yeah, he had seconds.
Is Panera Bread like based in Denver, or is it a Denver? I think it might be.
I think I remember my wife saying it was out there before we found it here.
I really like the soup at Panera Bread, specifically the broccoli cheddar soup, and I happen to have that in the press box. And I flew in that morning, commercial, and so, commercial flights, you don't really eat much. So I was pretty hungry when I got in there, and they did have some good food. But a good press box overall, a good setup. I mean, it's a good, and the fans are into it. That stadium
from opening kickoff till the end.
That stadium's loud. It shakes.
It's unbelievable.
They had some quirks in their game presentation this time, and Jason could probably talk about it too. In being a 50th anniversary legacy game, going with a black and white video board, and I know you and I, Eric, we were laughing pretty much throughout the whole game at the press box PA announcer who was trying his damnedest to call the Patriots what they were on that day, the Boston Patriots,
right, which they will be this Sunday. against the
Correct.
Houston Oilers.
Against the Houston Oilers. So every time in the press box, instead of just saying Patriots pass mm-hmm. play Brady to whatever,
right.
he would say Boston Patriots. Once or twice he said he made a mistake and
right.
called New England. One time he said New England, sort of chuckled to himself and corrected himself to Boston. So we kind of had to chuckle yeah. ourselves over that one. So yeah, you know, everything from a Patriots perspective, everything other than the outcome was pretty, you know, was pretty solid in
yeah.
Denver. So
I like the city a lot.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
a good time there.
Yeah.
Hey, did you hear about this Buffalo story? About the fan who put the billboard up, raised
no,
some money.
What
to
is
put
it with Buffalo and the fans this year? I mean,
I know
with Leotis McKelvin and
right,
and who was
well,
the
that,
other? Was it Whitner? No, Whitner. Something happened. Whatever. Well, what's the story? I don't think I heard this.
Well, it's an AP story from Orchard Park. A fan named Ryan Abshagen. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. Buffalo Bills fan, very unhappy with what's going on with that team right now.
Probably not the only one.
In a little more than a week. This unemployed 18-year-old, again, it's a teenage fan. The teenage fan was the same one
when you're describing an 18-year-old, do you have to say unemployed? I mean, maybe there's a few who are
well,
employed.
Right, but that's how the AP story is describing him, is unemployed, which I guess means he's not going to school
right.
either.
Right.
Because then he'd be a student. Right,
right.
Unemployed 18-year-old from Pennsylvania, actually, who's a Bills fan, raised enough money, $1,402 to be precise, and counting. He continues to raise money. Through an internet campaign to rent a billboard and advertise a message of discontent for everybody in Buffalo to see. For about a week, this message is going to be on one of those electronic billboards that sort of changes and flashes every so often. 3,000 times a day, people driving by Interstate 190 on the south side of the city are going to see this display that says, "It's time to clean house, Ralph," and Ralph is in all capital letters put some emphasis to the Bills owner,
yeah.
Ralph Wilson,
that's
that
so
things
ridiculous.
Are not going well, and the fans, the unemployed 18-year-old fan at the
right,
very least,
right.
is not happy about it.
Well,
we were talking on the show earlier how many bad teams are on the NFL this year.
There's a handful of teams at the very top who are elite, and then there are a handful of teams at the bottom who are so bad. But it's like they are truly the extremes. I mean, what are there four or five teams that are 5-0?
And then
three or four that are 0-5.
New Orleans is 4-0.
New Orleans is 4-0. And then there's three or four teams maybe that don't have a win. But
right.
that doesn't include Oakland.
Who has,
and it doesn't
right.
include Cleveland.
Right.
So you've got – and it doesn't include Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got St. Louis.
And Detroit is trying. I give them
yep.
the credit
you've
that
got
they're trying to win.
St. Louis, which is wretched.
Oh, yes.
Tampa Bay, wretched. Tennessee is playing wretched. But I think a lot of people look at them a little bit differently than the Rams and the Buccaneers. Then you've got who else do we
well
Kansas
Washington
City.
Washington
is not winless.
Horribly.
They have
Kansas
two wins.
City is winless.
Kansas City's winless, but at least
and they're trying. They probably should have beaten Dallas.
Right. Going to overtime. So it's like you've got the winless teams that are either wretched or are trying but are still winless. And then you've got a few other one or two win teams that are truly wretched and somehow or another have gotten a win, mainly because they played another
right.
wretched team. And you've got the elite teams. There aren't a – it seems like less than other years, there aren't a whole lot of teams in the middle. There's a lot of good, really good.
A lot of extremes.
A lot of the extremes, which is very interesting. When you're looking at, like, oh, you know, games this week, trying to pick games, if you're in any kind of contest where you know, elimination games or anything like that, it seems like it's been a little easier this year than in past years. Not a whole lot of those games have ended up in upsets. I mean, there seems like there have been a lot of games between the elite and the wretched, and haven't really been a lot of upsets.
And I think at this point you'd have to put the Patriots, surprisingly, in that middle echelon.
They are in that middle
echelon. They're not at
yeah.
the extreme elite at this
right.
point.
Oh, certainly not. You've got to be able to win a game on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're 0-2. It's not like they're 0-8. But you've got to have better performances on the road before you're elite. You've got to be able to beat the teams that you're in contention with for AFC supremacy consistently.
Mm-hmm.
They've beaten Baltimore, which, you know, I mean, they've lost two in a row now, so jury's still out on them. But, you know, other than that, Baltimore's the only team in their conference that is a contending team that they've beaten.
Right.
The Patriots are certainly in that middle. They're not elite. No question. No way.
I don't see any way that they lose this game.
I don't either.
On Sunday.
I don't either. I think Tennessee. I'm not expecting Tennessee to completely lay down. I think they've got some talent at running back, for instance. I think that they're a decent team, obviously. They probably overachieved last year. They certainly overachieved last year. They probably weren't 13-3 good.
Right.
They were good.
It played out in the playoffs.
Exactly.
They were exposed.
They were good. They probably weren't best in the conference good. And this year, they're not so good. They're probably not 0-5 good. And they'll give the Patriots some trouble in a few different spots.
Where do you think?
Where do I think?
Yeah.
I think Chris Johnson tears up everybody. And you don't have to necessarily feel embarrassed if Chris Johnson beats you. I think the Patriots, this is a great opportunity for the Patriots passing game to really make some strides, but they still have to prove that. Tennessee's secondary is banged up, but they still have to prove that they can consistently pass the ball. And the Patriots simply do not lose back-to-back games. It's as if it's part of their organizational philosophy.
Right.
I don't think it's just a coincidence. Since the start of 2003, they've lost back-to-back games just once. That was in 06, Jets and Colts. And I don't think it's a coincidence because I think the head coach and the coaching staff beats this team into a pulp mentally, mm-hmm. if not physically, in the week after a loss.
Yep.
And I still think there are enough guys who have been around here for a while. That number is dwindling.
Sure.
I think there are enough guys who understand what it takes to win games, and they don't like to lose games, and they don't like to lose them back-to-back. And, I think they've been playing better at home than on the road this year. It's hard to just say a blanket statement, they don't lose back-to-back, so that's why they'll win. But I think it's more than just a coincidence. And I think there's a lot to it. They don't want to lose you don't want to be the team that gives a winless team its first win. They're probably going to have to deal with that again the following week, Tampa Bay.
Probably, most likely, yeah.
And it's really interesting the way the schedule has been. The first 5 weeks, they play teams that hadn't had a loss, and then they go two straight games against teams
that haven't had a win.
Most likely, right. Tampa Bay plays, who does Tampa play? They played Philly last week.
Oh, they have Kansas City.
They have Kansas City.
At home.
Yeah.
And Kansas City's trying and playing. Yeah.
Kansas City is probably
of all the winless teams, they're probably in the best position to win a game.
Sure, and they're on paper, they're better than Tampa Bay. They're a better team than Tampa Bay.
So
that's an interesting one. That those are two of the poorest teams in the league, and they're playing each other this week. So,
New England's offense hasn't been on all cylinders all season. There have been spots when they have.
We're wrong.
What's that?
Tampa Bay hosts Carolina this week.
Oh, my bad. Yes. Washington
is where
Kansas City is. Yes.
Tampa Bay hosts Carolina. So,
two horrible teams.
So, that's a winnable game for Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, while very bad, has been competitive in a few games this year. So, they could be competitive against Carolina, I think. That could be an ugly game a la Cleveland-Buffalo from last week. But
man. Those poor fans got their money's worth, huh?
Now, would it be good? Or not good for the Patriots if Tampa Bay wins this game? Let's say the Patriots beat Tennessee and Tampa Bay beats Carolina.
Tampa Bay wins.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Patriots going in? Is it in the, Tampa Bay will have maybe gained a little confidence, a smidgen of momentum? Or is it, Tampa Bay's thinking, thank God we at least got that first one out of the way. Now we can kind of relax.
I think either way it's not going to matter.
Yeah.
Because
I think they should romp
either way.
Yeah.
But I'll play along there a little bit and say I'd rather have the team have the win, have the losing team get their first win.
Yeah.
That way,
there's something uncomfortable about going into a game. Once you get to week 5, 6, and beyond, something a little uncomfortable when you're the better team and you go into a game against a winless team.
Exactly. Trap game, we like to call it.
Trap game.
Yeah, I don't want a trap game.
You're a little more on edge.
And this is going to be a showcase game in London.
Yeah.
It's a lot riding on it as far as a lot of fans of the Patriots are UK based, and you want to put on a good show, not just for them, but because you're fighting for the lead in your division Tampa's not. It's all likelihood. It looks like we're going to have two rookie corners for the Titans.
Mm.
If not starting, at least playing most of the game. Against an offense that hasn't clicked on all cylinders, but hasn't looked bad at times either. So, look in your chops if you're a Patriots receiver?
Probably. You're probably thinking that, but I think
certainly
this
not
team
saying
still,
it, right. But,
but this team still takes a measure to pro. I mean, you don't want to, I think this team and the veterans that they have and all that, and the coaches, obviously, they're going into it knowing, well, you know, we have opportunities here, but we're not going to be able to capitalize on those opportunities if we're not still well prepared going to this game. So, you know, you would think that this is a perfect matchup for this offense and specifically this passing game. And we heard Tom Brady say that Belichick has just hammered into this team this week. We haven't had a lot of big pass plays. Let's get that going.
Haven't had any over 40
any
yards.
Any over 40. The only team in the league, I believe, that has, or that's what they've said. And this might be a perfect opportunity to get that going, maybe get that going early, and just get out in front and be able to have a comfortable lead, which is really something that, I mean, Atlanta, they were ahead by a significant amount by halftime. Not comfortable enough to, you know, not like 2007 comfortable.
And remember, they went for it on a fourth down.
Yeah.
And their own 24 with only a six-point lead.
So they really haven't had a comfortable lead. So
I see this game, Patriots 28, Titans between 10 and 14.
I think they can and should win this by double digits. I agree.
And the spread is something like 9 points, I believe.
9 or 10, yeah. Yeah.
I'm a little hesitant with that only because we haven't seen, like you said, we haven't had a comfortable game, comfortable lead for any extended period of time. But they're at home. They're the better team. They're playing for a reason, and Tennessee doesn't appear to be playing for anything at this point.
No, and you know what? They're 0-5, which right there, I don't think any team has ever made it to the playoffs at 0-5, and it's virtually unheard of. They're also 0-3 in their division. So you can't – I mean, you're 0-3 in your division 5 weeks in. You're hopeless.
Michael Griffin's safety called them the Tennessee Spoilers.
Interesting. Well, and that could be an indication that they're not taking the mindset of, well, let's give up on 0-9, let's go to 0-10. You know, if they play with some personal pride and some team pride, then they could come out – they could be a scary team against a lot of opponents down the stretch.
But it also acknowledges that their season is done. They're not trying to win 11 of the next 11 games.
And we've seen what 11-5 does. It doesn't necessarily – doesn't necessarily get you in the playoffs.
Right. And in that division, you're still looking up probably at the Colts.
Right. I mean, you're not – 3-3 isn't going to win, you know.
Right.
They're not going to get it done.
And real quick before we put this show to bed, next Tuesday, the 20th, is the NFL trading deadline.
It is, yes.
My question to you, Bilo, is what is more likely to happen? A team or teams make a major trade by the trading deadline, or a coach on one of these horrible teams gets the axe?
I would say more likely is a coach on one of these horrible teams gets the axe, because I think Jaron and Zorn are on such thin ice that a loss this week to, well, with Washington, it's, you know, if Washington loses to
Kansas City
at home or Buffalo on the road to the Jets, I mean, that's not – I would say we're more likely to see one of those guys get fired. Just, you know, blockbuster trades are unlikely. But I would say that maybe this year more so than others, a blockbuster trade could happen because of what we were saying a little while ago. There are so many terrible teams out there that if one of these terrible teams can get something for a player that they that has value, a la Cleveland trading Braylon Edwards last week, then I think there might be enough teams out there looking to make a move and deal a draft pick if the price is right.
Curious to see if the Patriots are one of those teams makes a deal. All right, that's going to do it for the playbook. Brian Lowe and the Fantasy Lowdown.
Yes, it is. We're talking about your fantasy team this
my
next
fantasy
hour.
Team?
Eric, yeah.
You're going to have nothing to talk about then.
That's true. We don't want to go silent for an hour.
All right, thanks for joining us on the playbook. Bilo and the Fantasy Lowdown is up next.